So let's look at Genesis 26. So, you know, we have a church of just about 800 attend every Sunday. And that doesn't account for the people that sometimes come that aren't there that particular Sunday. So we have about, I think, 1,100, 1,200 different people that come to our church throughout the month. And you know, from time to time, well, really, we're, as a church, we're losing about 60 or 70 each year, really closer to 70, because they just, the reasons you get are numerous, but what it comes down to is they don't feel like they belong, for whatever reason. And so it's really important that this hour of each Lord's Day is spent with people. And you are an anomaly, because you didn't go from a huge service to a around the table discussion group. You went to a large class, which is why I do my very best to not get preachy in here. And of course, we don't sing. I was thinking about having Keith Adams sing a solo today, but he doesn't like that idea, so we decided not to. So from time to time, it is really important that we start another Sunday school class in the church. And so the Witts and the Hazlets next week are starting one in out in the modulars. So if you want to know how to get there, if you feel maybe God might want you to be a part of a new class startup, you head on down here to the four computers, head out the door, and then there are these modulars behind the kitchen. And what room number? 606? Is that? Yes, so 606. So you go out there on the deck between the two modulars. It's the first door on your left. So the Witts and the Hazlets will be starting next week in that classroom. And so hopefully the goal will be that you find some of those folks that don't go to Sunday school and that they will go to that class. And that will mean the back door of the church closes a little bit more, you know, because now we have 18 adult classes to pick from instead of 17. So you will not hurt my feelings if you say, you know, I think we're supposed to be a part of that. You know, if this is about Bill Sturm and his ego, which sometimes I slip into that. Sometimes I do. I'm not going to lie to you. Maybe a couple of you. I'm going to choke you, Greg. So sometimes, you know, you might slip into that because I am a son of Adam. But when it gets down to it, as much as I'd love to see a full chapel, I'd love to see a fuller church. So part of how that happens is by starting more classes and getting people to look at each other more in a smaller setting. So if you feel like you're supposed to be a part of that, just let me know. And I'll have a tear in my milk or however that song goes and move on. Is that how it goes? Isn't that what it's called? Yeah, I'm just kidding. I know what it's called. All right. Not a tear in my milk. All right. So we're in Genesis 26 and heard in an antique store the other day. Where it belongs. So you might remember, starting at verse 26, you have another meeting with the line of Abraham and the line of Abimelech. We have supposed that this is a different Abimelech. We have supposed. It's been 70 years since Abraham and his wife and their entourage shook hands with the folks from Gerar, Abimelech's folks. Well, here we are, five chapters later, and now it's Isaac. And you remember how that goes. We're not going to reteach that lesson. But as they rose up in verse 31 in the morning and swore one to another, Isaac and his folks, Isaac sent them away. They departed from him in peace. Abimelech and his folks left, and they agreed, we're going to make an agreement. And as soon as they did, verse 32, it came to pass that same day that the people departed, that Isaac's servants came. Now we're in chapter 26, verse 32. And told him concerning the well which they digged. That's interesting. And said unto him, we have found water. And he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba unto this day. We talked about how that was, how the words mean an oath of seven. So, why do we have a well here when we already have a place where this well has been named? Well, we'll talk about that in a short bit. Then in verse 34, Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mind to Isaac and to Rebekah. And we're going to talk about why did that bother Isaac and Rebekah. Verse 1. It came to pass that when Isaac was old and his eyes were dim so that he could not see, he called Esau, his eldest son, and said unto him, my son. And he said, Here am I, behold, here am I. And he said, behold, now I am old, I know not the day of my death. Now therefore take, I pray thee, thy weapons, thy quiver and thy bow, and go to the field and take me some venison. And make me savory meat, such as I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless thee before I die. And Rebekah heard when Isaac spake to Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt for venison and to bring it. And Rebekah spake unto Jacob her son, saying, behold, I heard thy father speak unto Esau thy brother, saying, bring me venison, and make me savory meat, that I may eat and bless thee before the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. All right, so we already know from the preceding chapter, Jacob and Esau are how old? Right. Verse 34, the preceding chapter. So I think it's comical. Verse 8, now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to that which I command thee. He did not say, I am 18. And I will do what I want. So that might be how we did things with our parents, but I hope we can see that that doesn't, being an American doesn't necessarily make you honorable. Okay. Verse 9. Go now to the flock and fetch me from thence two good kids of the goats. Now those are not children hanging out with the goats in the farm. Those are really baby goats. And I will make them savory meat for thy father, such as he loveth. And thou shalt bring it to thy father that he may eat. So Rebekah's going to do the cooking. She said in verse 9, I will make them savory meat. And thou shalt bring it to thy father, verse 10, and he may eat, and that he may bless thee before his death. Now, I think this is really amazing because you have, everyone thinks Isaac's about to kick it by the farm, whatever the term is at the time. He is about to die, all right? But we know that Jacob has not yet left to go to the house of Laban to find his wife, who he thought was Rachel, was really Leah. And then he worked 7 years for, so he got Leah and Rachel, and we find out he was actually there a grand total of 20 years. And then we find out later in the book of Genesis, Isaac dies at 180 years old. So he lives at least another 20 years after everyone's sure he's about to cash in his chips. All right? So can you imagine this? How bad off was this guy? Everyone thinking he's about to die. As a matter of fact, we'll get onto it more in the later in the chapter. Where am I? Verse 11? Okay. And Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, behold, Esau, my brother, is a hairy man, and I'm a smooth man. I probably read that with a predisposed accent or emphasis on particular words. It's still funny. Verse 12. My father peradventure will feel me, and I shall seem to him as a deceiver, and I shall bring a curse upon me and not a blessing. And his mother said to him, upon me be thy curse, my son. Only obey my voice and go fetch me them. Hit it. And get back in here. You're wasting time. Verse 14. And he went and fetched and brought them to his mother, and his mother made savory meat such as his father loved. And Rebekah took goodly raiment of her eldest son Esau, which were with her in the house. That's interesting. And put them upon Jacob, her younger son. Now remember, they're 40 at least. All right. And she put the skins of the kids of the goats upon his hands and upon the smooth of his neck. And she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. Now, maybe there's someone out there already thinking, well, we don't know that this is in order. Maybe their marriage is after this episode. Well, then it's even more marvelous that they think Isaac is old. Because you're taking something and shifting it later in the story. That means Isaac has way more than 20 years left in his life, and they still think he's about to die. So if you change the order here, it really doesn't do anything but add to the marvel of how bad Isaac must have looked. Okay? Let's see here. Where did I leave off? Thank you. Did I read 17 or no? Okay. And she gave the savory meat and the bread which she had prepared into the hand of her son Jacob. And he came to his father and said, my father. And he said, here am I. Who art thou, my son? And Jacob said unto his father, I'm Esau, thy firstborn. So lie number one. I have done according as thou badest me. Arise, I pray thee, sit and eat of my venison, that thy soul may bless me. So continuation of lie one. And Isaac said to his son, how is it that thou hast found it so quickly, my son? And he said, because the Lord thy God brought it to me. Lie number two. And he brought God into this lie. Isn't that interesting? And Isaac said to Jacob, come near, I pray thee, that I may feel thee, my son, whether thou be my very son, Esau, or not. And Jacob went near unto Isaac and his father, and he felt him and said, the voice is Jacob's voice, but the hands are the hands of Esau. And he discerned him not, because his hands were hairy, as his brother Esau's hands. So he blessed him. And he said, art thou my very son Esau? And he lied a third time. He said, I am. And he said, bring it near to me, and I will eat of my son's venison, that my soul may bless thee. And he brought it near to him, and he did eat, and brought him wine, and he drank. And his father Isaac said to him, come near now, and kiss me, my son. And he came near, and kissed him, and smelled the smell of his raiment, and blessed him, and said, see, the smell of my son is as the smell of a field which the Lord has blessed. Therefore, God give thee of the dew of heaven and the fatness of the earth and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee and the nations bow down to thee, the Lord over thy brethren. Now here you have Isaac giving the blessing to Jacob. Who did Jacob give this blessing to of people and nations bowing down to him? Judah. Yeah, remember Genesis 49, a scepter will not depart from Judah until Shiloh come. Do you remember that? All right. So this is outstanding. This is fulfilled in Judah, the son of Jacob. And let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be every one that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee. It came to pass, as soon as Isaac had made an end of blessing Jacob, Jacob was yet scarce gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. And he also had made savory meat and brought it unto his father and said unto his father, let my father arise and eat of his son's venison, that thy soul may bless me. And Isaac his father said to him, who are you? Who art thou? And he said, I am thy son, thy firstborn Esau. And Isaac trembled very exceedingly and said, who? Where is he that has taken venison and brought it me? And I have eaten all of before thou camest and have blessed him. Yea, and he shall be blessed. Now, isn't that something? The weight of the words was so much that it didn't matter he blessed the wrong guy. It was binding because he spoke it. Isn't that something? And yet, Jacob's about to cash in on that. And at the same time, Jacob had no problem taking the Lord's name in vain. In verse 20. Verse 34, when Esau heard the words of his father, he cried with a great and exceeding bitter cry and said to his father, bless me even also, O my father. And he said, thy brother came with subtlety and has taken away thy blessing. And he said, is not he rightly named Jacob? For he has supplanted me these two times. He took away my birthright, and behold, now he has taken away my blessing. And he said, hast thou not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said to Esau, behold, I have made him thy lord. And all his brethren have I given to him for servants. Think about the weight of the words. Man, how our culture has changed. You've got to check all to make sure there's no cross fingers. And, you know, were you in your right mind when you made that promise? And did you really mean it? You want a do-over? Did you want to try over? Was it notarized? Was it done in front of an attorney? Did you handshake? Pinky promise? I mean, everything has changed, it seems like. No, I bless him, and that's the way it's going to be. And with corn and wine have I sustained him, and what shall I do now unto thee, my son? And Esau said unto his father, hast thou not but one blessing, my father? Bless me, even me also, O my father. And Esau lifted up his voice and wept. Can you imagine the scene in the tent that day? And Isaac his father answered and said unto him, behold, thy dwelling shall be the fatness of the earth and of the dew of heaven from above. You're going to live under the stars. And by thy sword shalt thou live, and shall serve thy brother. And it shall come to pass, when thou shalt have dominion, that thou shalt break his yoke from off thy neck. And Esau hated Jacob because of the blessing wherewith his father blessed him. And Esau said in his heart, the days of mourning for my father are at hand. See, he even thinks Isaac's about to die. Then will I slay my brother Jacob. And these words of Esau, her elder son, were told to Rebekah, and she sent and called Jacob, her younger son, and said unto him, behold, thy brother Esau, as touching thee, doth comfort himself, purposing, to kill thee. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice. A third time she said that to Jacob. Arise, flee thou to Laban, my brother, to Laban, my brother, to Haran. So here that comes full circle from chapter 24. Now we're back to this Laban character, who was the brother of Rebekah, or still, of course, is. But now, in chapter 27, it's hard to change that once someone's your brother. And in chapter 27, now Laban is not the brother of the bride in the story. He's about to be the father of the bride in the story. Do you see how that works? We're about to see this now. And so we start to see the beginning of this big sandwich, I should say the end of it, that begins in the last chapter. And we'll look at it in just a minute. Why did I read 40-some verses? Particular purpose. Verse 44, tarry with him a few days until thy brother's fury turn away, until the brother's anger turn away from thee, and he forget that which thou hast done to him. Then I will send and fetch thee from thence. Why should I be deprived also of you both in one day? In other words, I have now lost Esau. What does that imply? That Esau knows mom was involved. Yeah. Yeah. Verse 46, Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life. Look here. Because of the daughters of Heth. Now we talked about that and we'll talk about it again. If Jacob take a wife of the daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? All right. Does anyone in verse 46 have a version of the Bible that says anything different than daughters of Heth? All right. What do you have, Brian? All right. The Hittite women. So now the Hittite women are coming up again. They were in chapter 27, verse 46. And they were at the end of the previous chapter in verse 34, where Esau married Hittite women. Now, why did I read all those verses? So that you could see that probably the reason for the drama in chapter 27 is because of the bookmarks that you find on either side of that story. You have Esau marrying Hittites at the beginning of the story, and you have Rebekah afraid that Jacob will marry Hittites at the end of the story. You see that? Everyone with me? So probably the reason chapter 27 occurs the way it does is because Rebekah has some real heartache with who Esau married. Okay? Now, I'm not saying it's good, but I think we should remind ourselves of what Rebekah was told about these two sons when she was pregnant. Do you remember that? Let's look back at chapter number 25. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Chapter 25, look at verse 20. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife. So Isaac was married at 40, and his son Esau was married at 40. And probably Jacob was married not long after. Okay, we'll find out shortly. And verse 21, Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. You might remember 20 years of barrenness, it seems, from the story, because Isaac was 60 when they were born. And you might remember verse 24, when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And but I want you to notice particularly verse 23. The Lord said to her, two nations are in thy womb. Two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. I'm glad we say it differently now. The one people shall be stronger than the other. And here we go. The elder shall serve the younger. So chapter 27 is rather fulfilling, isn't it, of this prophecy? Now, to what end we feel like Rebekah felt like she had to be a part in that fulfillment, probably we won't know the side of the grave, but it seems like she felt like that she was a big part of that fulfillment. To the point where she was willing to be deceitful to her very own husband. That's really something. So let's get on with some questions here. This Beersheba place. How are we now, just now at the end of chapter 26, calling this Beersheba, which means the well of the seven or the well of the oath of the seven? Don't we remember this happening before? And the answer is, yeah, we see Beersheba first named in chapter 21, verse 33. So there are a couple of possibilities here. Can you help me with them? I mean, we have a well being named Beersheba here. But we already have a well named Beersheba in chapter 21, and Abraham called it that. James? That's interesting. So it could be that Moses, the author, was naming it by a term that it would become. And that's a possibility. It would be a lot like maybe a suburb of Fayetteville that didn't used to be Fayetteville. It used to be an unincorporated suburb or something. And so if you're telling a story of something that occurred 100 years ago, you wouldn't call it by its name 100 years ago. You'd call it by its current name. That might be something Moses did. So it wasn't Beersheba until this account. That's possible. What's another idea? I mean, this is not going to be the first time you find an apparent contradiction in Scripture. So we're trying to teach here. Go ahead, Autumn. So a second well named Beersheba. Is that what you're proposing? So they might have just rediscovered Beersheba or redug another well because the first Beersheba was filled up. Okay, so a second Beersheba. Yep, that's a possibility. So you see, there are easier answers than just saying, we have a contradiction. Okay, there are easier answers. We've come up with three possible answers to that. Okay. What'd you say? Oh, good. Well, that was easy. All right. And then here's a picture of the current well, Beersheba. Apparently some work goes into digging those wells. You can see a ladder of sorts, or maybe a narrow staircase on the right side of the well. It was some kind of work to get down into those things. So, all right, so what can we learn from verse 34 of chapter 26? Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith. So Judy Kaiser is in the Bible, we find out, but she does not want to be called Judith. Do not do it. Apparently only Doug can call her Judith. Is that right, brother? Because she just about gave me a knot on my forehead one time when I called her Beersheba. Or I called her Judith. I was reading Beersheba. I didn't call her Beersheba. All right, so I called her Judith. See how much trouble I can get in up here in just a short time? It's outstanding. A lot of fun. All right. So let's talk about how Esau's age helps us. So I'm going to ask the question, how far are we removed from Abraham, and how far are we removed from the Exodus or the Passover, whichever you'd like to say? Well, let's read a few scriptures here for some help. Again, I go through this exercise just about every time on purpose. To some of you, you'd be like, oh, I hate this. You know, I don't want to come here and do math. I know probably some of you that fits you pretty well, but God put the years in here and the ages on purpose. And so I think that it's to help us to, well, among many things, tell us how old human history is, but also to give us a date on a calendar. So anyway, we find from Exodus chapter 12, verse 40. Now the sojourning of the children of Israel who dwelt in Egypt was 430 years. And it came to pass at the end of 430 years, even the selfsame day, it came to pass that all the hosts of the Lord went out from the land of Egypt. And so we have a few things that we can ask ourselves here. And many people have disagreed on this. So 430 years, by the time the 2 million plus Jews, let's see, is it Adam Clark, the commentary writer? I think it is. He puts a good work through in the numbers in his commentary, and he has it at 3.4 million Jews, and it's very conservative. When he talks about all the things he's not counting, it's very conservative to say over 3 million Jews left Egypt, all right? Which makes a lot of what took place in that Exodus incredible. I mean, boxcars of manna were needed every day. A river needed to be coming out of the rock. The Red Sea parting had to be not just enough for Charlton Heston to get through on a little chariot. I'm talking about that thing had to be, I mean, hundreds of yards wide for everyone to get through in a night. So that was no small thing. So the question is, when does the 430 years begin? We've been through this, but we have some newer folks in here. I think we're on week 20-something of Genesis this time through. And so we've talked about this a few times. And the question is, when does the 430 years start? And many have said, well, it starts when Abraham went in Genesis 12. Some people say it starts when Jacob went there, end of the book. It starts when Joseph went there into slavery. It starts after the death of Joseph, after Jacob. Okay, so let's just quit guessing and let Paul tell us. Now to Abraham and his seed were the promises made. Now, how old was Abraham when the first promise was made to him? 75. Who said that? Who's the brave person? Oh, there's no brave people. Who is it? Who are you pointing? I see. Okay. That was not John's voice. There's no way that was John's voice.
75?
Who was it? Seriously? All right, Rachel. Good. All right. That sounds a little bit more likely. Okay. All right. So 75. And that would be funny, though, John. And so it started, these promises, 430 years started when Abraham was 75 years old. And so let's talk through this a little bit. And yes, I double and triple checked my math yesterday, so there shouldn't be any surprises. Shouldn't be. And then 25 years later, Isaac is born. 25 years later. So let's see here if I can do a little math here, because we want to see how far was it, how many years between the marriage of Esau and Exodus. Well, we're going to start with the 430 years between Abraham's promise, Abraham at 75, and we're going to put Abe at 75. That is not an email address, okay? So Abraham at 75 years old receives the promise. And we find out that he is 25 years later is when Isaac is born. So now we're down to 405. Isaac's birth, all right, is 25 years later. All right, there is a TH at the end of that word, okay? All right, and then let's see here. Next slide. Isaac is 60 when Jacob and Esau are born. We find that from chapter 25. You can look at that verse if you'd like. I'll read it to you. Chapter 25 and verse 26 says, "After that came his brother out, and the hand took hold on Esau's heel, and his name was called Jacob, and Isaac was 60 or 80 years old when she bare them." So Isaac is 60. So there are 60. Isaac is 60 when Jake and Esau are born. All right. Jake and Esau are born 60 years later. So what year is it now? Huh? Oh, good. I'm right. All right. So 345. Excellent. And then we're going to go to the next occurrence we're told about in Scripture. Esau is 40 when he marries. All right. So this seems pretty easy here. Esau is married 40 years later. So 305, Esau's marriage. All right. So I can tell you, based on the book of Genesis, that there are 305 years between Esau's marriage and the Exodus. 305 years. That wasn't very hard. So, that's that. So that's one side of the board. So, it will be 300 years thereabout until the children of Israel come out of Egypt. All right, so a little bit more math here. How old was Moses when he led the children of Israel out of Egypt? 80. So let's talk about this. We'll take 80 away, and we have now how many years between Esau's marriage and Moses' birth? 225. Yep, so 225 years between Esau's marriage and Moses' birth. But in keeping with our heading up here, between the marriage of Esau and Exodus, we have 305 years. All right. Let's see if we can find some other things to nail on a timeline. What am I trying to do? I'm trying to show you that you can come away with more summaries, conclusions from Scripture than maybe you thought. So what we're trying to do is maybe put a year on the calendar for Esau's marriage. That is the universal answer for I'm trying to get more time. All right, so my project for next week or the week after is to determine how we can say, how were they afflicted for 400 years and still? Do you agree with Paul's summary that from the time the promises were given to the Exodus, there were 430 years?
Well, I mean, it has to be, but how does this fit with that?
I don't know yet. Okay. I don't know yet. It's a cool thing to be able to say, I got something else to learn this week. Oh, no, there's no problem with asking questions. If I'm afraid of your questions, I probably shouldn't be teaching. Brian? Well, 30 years down the road would have made Abraham 105. And it'd be difficult to prove that Abraham's seed was afflicted in Egypt long after he had left the country. Because, you know, he did leave in chapter 13, and that's when the division between he and Lot took place, and Lot went off to the Watt. You remember that. So, unless we could find some sort of biblical record that some of Abraham's crew stayed in Egypt, it would be hard to prove that. But that is an answer. So, thank you. All right, that's a possibility. All right, so let's talk about this. Can we put anything else on the calendar? Sure. Here we go. Exodus to the building of the temple. We don't even have to guess here. It came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign, end of the verse, he began to build the house of the Lord. So, after the Exodus, how many years took place until Solomon first started building the temple of the Lord? Yep, it's very clear. 480 years. Now, so we have 2 points up here. We have Esau's marriage. And remember, we've done this with pretty much everything in the book. And so I'm just trying to reteach how we do things when we're trying to just give some realistic years to this. So Esau's marriage, we have the Exodus in the middle, and we have the temple's beginning over here, Solomon's temple. We know we have 305 years here. We know we have 480 years here. So basically, all we need to do is find out when the building of the temple took place, or find out when. Well, we just find one of these two events, and we should be able to subtract this many years and find out what year Esau was married. Well, as you know, we are on a different calendar system than we were. I think we can all agree on that. And so this Gregorian calendar, I think, is the one we're on right now. And most scholars, isn't that a lovely way to say it? Most scholars will put Solomon's Temple in the year, of 966 B.C. So if you've ever heard anyone say something like, well, how do we get a 1446 B.C. Exodus? Well, you start with the 966 B.C. and you add 480 years and you have a 1446 B.C. Exodus. Exactly. So you need a secular source, or let's say it better this way, so I'm not misunderstood. You have to find an extra biblical source to give you a year to staple one of these events on. So, basically, we take 966 and add 480 and add 305, and you should get a year something like this for Esau's marriage, 1751 B.C. So, approximately 1751 years before the birth of Christ, I know there's probably some discussion to be had about whether or not he was born in 4 B.C. because of things people found since the Gregorian calendar was founded. But, give or take 5 or 6 years, let me even say 10 years, whatever. You're about 1,750 years before the birth of Christ, Esau was married. Okay? So, does everyone see where that could have... No, I'm not saying asking do you agree. I'm asking do you know where we got that?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. One of us does. That's good. Very helpful. One last question before I let you go for today, because we're almost out of time. Can you believe it? One of the questions that I'd like to leave you with is, why were these marriages with Esau at the end of chapter 26... such a problem for mom and dad? Look at verse 34 again of chapter 26. Esau was 40 years old when he took to wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, which were a grief of mind to Isaac and to Rebekah. All right. This is a good question. Why would Rebekah have a problem? Why would Isaac and Rebekah have a problem with Esau marrying Hittites? Say it again, Greg. They're actually not. We're going to see in just a minute. They are a separate people group, ethnicity, within Palestine, calling it what it is today, within the Promised Land. Do you have an idea? Was that you? No? Okay. Anyone else? Oh, Teresa. Yeah, they were definitely not Jehovah followers. No, they were not. They were not followers of the Most High or the Creator. Yeah. So you're saying it might have been just typical in-law issues? Maybe. I would say, though, that you might be right, but I would also say that I think there is something significant to the fact that Esau married Hittites, and at the end of the next chapter, they are afraid of Jacob doing the same thing. So, let's look at a few things here. Look at chapter 15. Look at chapter 15. And this is the reference, by the way, which I think, Walter, you went with just earlier. But look at verse number 15 of chapter 15. God is talking to Abram, soon to be Abraham. Verse 15. Thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in good old age. Now, what's not described there is where he's going to be buried. Okay, y'all with me? Where is he buried, by the way? With his wife. Where? You're right, Thomas. Where, though? Mamre, in the cave of Machpelah, which he purchased from Hittites. Genesis 23. So they're going to, Abraham and all of his loved ones, for the most part, are buried in land that they bought from Hittites. But that's not really the only significant thing there, although I think that's interesting. Verse 16. In the fourth generation, they shall come hither, or here, again, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. It came to pass that when the sun went down and it was dark, behold, a smoking furnace and a burning lamp that passed between those pieces. In the same day, the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. Now look. Who's involved with this big takeover? The Kenites, Kenizzites, Cadmonites, here we go, and the Hittites. So if you know that the Hittites are to be conquered by your family, you know that not only are they not a part of the promises of God, but they are soon supposed to be wiped out. And then Abraham, being a godly, level-headed man in chapter 23, buys land from the people that he could just take it from eventually to bury his wife in. Chapter 23, the sons of Heth, you might remember that, or the Hittites. So that is a problem. That is a real problem for Isaac and Rebekah. Why are you marrying people that not only are not a part of our family? That is a problem. What do we see at the end of chapter 27? That was really kind of a deal for Rebekah. What does she say? What do they say at the end of chapter 27? Where does she send Jacob? Her house. I need you to go back to where I came from and marry someone from there. See that? So probably Rebekah and Isaac felt a little shunned, a little spurned, if you would. And so Rebekah feels like her people were spurned by her not favorite son. But we've identified three or four reasons. He married people that were not under the blessing of God. Now, boy, is there application there or what? Y'all with me? Okay. Married people that were not under the blessing of God. Married people that were soon going to be destroyed in God's perfect will. Married people that were not from her household. And it gets a little worse. All right. Look at chapter 36. And then we're going to bring this plane in for a landing. Okay. By the way, if you didn't get emails from me regarding an activity in January or February or the lesson for today, that means I don't have your email address, or I'm not sure you want to be added to the list. So fix me on that if you would like to be involved with that email traffic. Now, look at verse 1 of Genesis 36. Now, these are the generations of Esau, who is Edom. Esau took his wives of the daughters of Canaan, Adah, the daughter of Elon the Hittite, Aholiabmah, the daughter of Anah, the daughter of Zibeon the Hivite, and Bashemath, Ishmael's daughter. Well, let's just throw this up on the screen then, and we'll just open this can of worms before we leave. You might notice in verse 34, chapter 26, Bashemath is the daughter of a Hittite. In chapter 36, verse 2, she's the daughter of Ishmael. Well, Ishmael's supposed to be a past chapter in their lives. The last time you saw Ishmael was when? That's right, at Abraham's funeral. Well, good job. That's good recall. So there's no question here that there are legitimately four or five issues with Esau marrying Hittite women. Somehow, and when we get to chapter 36, you're going to love it with all his genealogies. Dad had to go through the trouble of waiting for months for the errand to be over in chapter 24, and his oldest son didn't even learn from that. So there are a number of reasons why Isaac and Rebekah had an issue. So let me say it again. We read 40-some verses of chapter 27 to show you that it had much to do with their choice of spouses. Okay? At the beginning, you have Esau marrying a Hittites, and mom and dad have a problem with it. At the end of chapter 27, after the big deceit comes and goes, you have them trying to reassure themselves that Jacob will not make the same mistake. Now, think about it. As an author, if you're writing it like that, you are trying to get the reader, which is you and I, to understand the episode in the middle has something to do with the two bookmarks, the two covers on the book, right? So we need to think like readers in here and not necessarily like Americans from 2014. I pray.